You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hi, I'm Margie Nomura, and welcome to the Desert Island Dishes podcast. This is the podcast where every week I ask my guests to choose their 7 Desert Island dishes. These range from finding out about the dish that most reminds them of their childhood, the best dish they've ever eaten, and of course, the last dish they would choose to eat before being cast off to the desert island. I hope you're all well. At the time of recording, we are still basking in the most beautiful spring-like weather, so fingers crossed that continues. I've had a very busy week, as last weekend I made my brother's wedding cake, which you will know if you follow me on Instagram, at Margie Nomura, because I documented the whole process in my stories, which was really fun to do, and hopefully I'm going to do lots more of that kind of thing going forwards. If you haven't yet left a 5-star rating for Desert Island Dishes, now is your moment. It really does only take a few seconds to do, and it makes such a difference and helps other people to find out about the podcast, which is amazing. And I also just really love reading your reviews. So we have a very special episode for you today, which I hope you're going to really enjoy. So I'm going to stop waffling, and without further ado, here is today's episode. My guest today is Jo Wicks, otherwise known as The Body Coach. Jo has taken the fitness world by storm in just 5 years. He has gone from personal trainer doing boot camps in the park that sometimes people wouldn't show up for, to a bona fide fitness guru with his own empire. He's written 7 cookbooks and is a multi-million best-selling author, having sold 3 million copies to date. His first book was the 2nd best-selling cookbook on record, and he's even been named the 2nd most influential person in food in the UK. He boasts millions of followers across social media and has had the kind of success most people only dream of. But through it all, he says his mission has remained the same from day one, and that's to get the world off diets, become more active, and to eat proper food. Welcome, Jo Wicks.
Thank you for that wonderful introduction. When I hear that, I feel like you're talking about somebody else. I can't kind of comprehend and sort of realize that that's me and what I've achieved. It's been a mad few years, isn't it, for me?
It was exhausting kind of just describing it. And I think the word journey gets bandied about a bit much, but I genuinely feel like that's the best way of describing what's happened to you. Could you ever have envisaged any of this?
Definitely not. And I always say to people who see me and maybe land on my channels and think, oh, he's got all these followers and he's had all this success and it's been overnight. And it was really an 8-year journey from start to finish. And I always like to share that story because it was a struggle. When you start out as a personal trainer and you're doing boot camps and you're flying and you're marketing yourself, and it's difficult, you know, you don't have clients, no one's turning up, but I was resilient in that respect. And in terms of the success of the books, when I got approached to do the book, I had no idea it was going to be successful. I thought, you know, I've got an audience that are engaged and they're liking my stuff online, but are they going to really translate into an actual physical, you know, book sale and I'm going to buy the product? And, you know, it's just been phenomenal. When I think about, yeah, like the comparisons between other TV chefs that have been on TV for 20 years, and I think I've sold 3 million books with very little TV, and it's just the power of, you know, social media and having a really engaged audience online.
It's unbelievable, and it is kind of, you probably couldn't have even dreamt this, because what's happened has just been so much bigger than possibly what you ever imagined. I heard an interview you did when, I think it was right back at the beginning, and everything was just beginning to take off, and you said that you felt like you'd won the lottery, which when I heard that, I thought that was really modest, because obviously that takes away from all of the hard work that you put in. But does it still feel like that in a way?
I've just been on this conveyor belt, like a kind of hamster wheel from the start, but it all happened in a kind of organic, nice sort of pace where, you know, I had an opportunity, like I'd be in a magazine or a newspaper, and then I'd get on Sunday brunch or like This Morning or Good Morning Britain, little kind of incremental things. So I can't say I woke up and thought I was successful. It's been a gradual process, and different things came and opportunities, but it is, I do feel very lucky and very grateful that I've managed to kind of harness social media in a positive way and really get my personality across through effectively a 15-second video, which not only kind of made people laugh, but it also inspired them to actually get cooking. And so that's my proudest achievement of all the things I've achieved, is I know that I've affected millions of people and got them cooking and feeling good.
Yeah, it's amazing. And in the introduction, I said that you're the second most influential person in food in the UK, which is pretty amazing. I'm guessing second only to Jamie Oliver.
Yeah, it's got to be top boy is Jamie Oliver, yeah. Isn't it? He always will be top boy. And I've got so much respect for him, and he's such a nice guy. We've actually connected a little bit. We've done a little bit of filming together, and I ask him for advice. He really helps me. You know, he mentors me a little bit with certain things. And I love the fact that he's been around for so long and he's had some of the best, most successful cookbooks. And then, like, you look, you know, a year or so ago, he released 5 ingredients and it sold over 1 million copies. So I like knowing that I may have a few dips and I may not sell, you know, every book might not be a smash, but I know that if I had the right idea at the right time, I could catch another wave of success and have a really good product. So it is challenging when I've had such success with my first book that all the other books live in its shadows. And that on their own, they're still like incredibly successful books, but you compare it to the red one and you think, well, how are you ever going to, you know, replicate that? But yeah. I'm not too worried. I just think as long as I'm sharing good content and inspiring, then I'll still be around in the next 20 years.
Yeah, that's such an interesting, I hadn't even thought about that, but yeah, you're right. Each of those ones as a standalone is still a huge success. It's just the first one was just a phenomenon. Okay, let's dive straight into the first desert island dish. And that's the dish that most reminds you of your childhood.
The dish that most reminds me of my childhood is actually the only thing my mum can really cook. And I always say this in interviews, and it's not in a nasty way,
yeah.
But she had my brother when she was 17, or she left home at 15. She had my brother when she was 17. She had me when she was 19. So, you know, nutrition and education around food, it just was non-existent. And, you know, she did the best she could. But you might think I had a really healthy child in that upbringing, but it was all like sandwiches and crisps. And we'd have a picnic, which would be, you know, yeah, like you come home, picnic for dinner, it'd be a sandwich with crisps, you know, wagon wheels, ice gems. It was really, really unhealthy food. I pretty much lived off sugar. But the one thing she could cook, because my mum is actually Italian, is okay. Lasagna. So my mum's lasagna is the dish that reminds me mostly of my childhood. And just so you know, like, it was literally like Dolmio, you know, white sauce, Dolmio tomato sauce. It wasn't like she created all the ingredients, but something about it when she put it all together, it was just a really, like, it reminds me of my child, even when I have it now, all the cheese on top and she gets the pasta nice and crispy, like the lasagna sheets. And it's just it's quite a nostalgic meal for me.
And you say that you didn't have the healthiest childhood. Were you always interested in sport and exercise?
I was always active. Yeah, I was never, you know, I wasn't like a child that was overweight, but the amount of sugar I must have consumed, you know, we used to chug like Sunny Delight and just, I just remember my cupboards were full of sweets and chocolate and crisps because my mum really, really had a sweet tooth as well. She'd drink like loads of cans of Coke, and it was just one of those things, like, we just knew there was going to be cupboards full of chocolate, so you come home. So I ate a lot of junk, but I wasn't, I suppose because I was so active, always running around, always doing sport, I wasn't a child that was overweight in any way. But my kind of passion with food came a lot later in life.
Yeah. And wanted to say that what you're doing in schools at the moment is absolutely amazing. And the focus with children being on movement rather than just fixating on the food that they're eating. Tell us a bit more about what you're doing.
Yeah, a really big passion project for me at the moment is working with children and getting school kids exercising. So I've been doing these workouts live on YouTube. I stream it and schools all over the UK and all over the world take part. And you've got children in like their classrooms in their uniform, like at year one and two in reception. And you've got like, you know, older sort of secondary school people doing it in the sports hall. And I love that I've managed to connect with not only like adults and parents and teachers, but also engaging children in exercise, because I truly believe that a child that exercises will be, you know, happier, smarter, more intelligent. And if you don't get them thinking about it at a young age, they could become a sedentary adult. And it's very difficult to get an adult into exercise who've never done it as a kid.
Yeah, that's so true. And you've said that you want to do for school exercise what Jamie Oliver did for food. Have you been surprised at the current situation? Like, some of the schools that you've been to don't even have a PE teacher.
It's really common now that, yeah, the academic subjects are obviously the priority. So some schools don't have an actual designated PE teacher. Sometimes the sport and physical activities are getting pushed out of the curriculum because there's more emphasis on the other stuff. But, you know, I know that me as a child and even as an adult, when I exercise in the morning, I'm more focused, I'm more productive, I get more done. And it's the same for a child. If a child exercises, and we've proved it, it doesn't take money or facilities. It's just like, get in the sports hall or the classroom, press play, let the kids take part in this 15-minute workout. All the kind of anecdotal evidence has been that the children have been so much more alert, more you know, increased attention and focus. So it's essential. It's not even just about the educational. It's just like a mental health, wellness, mindset, self-confidence. A child that goes through school, you know, inactive, sedentary and overweight is a very different child who goes through through school as a fit, happy, confident little kind of athlete or active child. So I really believe in that. I really want to make a difference with that. And I think that'll be my legacy. Like, you remember Jamie Oliver's school dinners. Of all the things he's done, it's the thing you remember. So I think in 5-10 years time, the thing that people will remember me for is the guy that got, you know, Britain's kids active and healthy.
Yeah, what an amazing mission. And I think it's also so clever because, as you say, these kids are on Facebook, they're on YouTube anyway. So why not use it to help them start exercising? It's very clever.
Yeah, using tech. I'm using YouTube and the platform they're on and disrupting it a little bit and saying, I know you're going to be watching your, you know, your PewDiePies and your KSIs and all these videos, but let's just do 50 minutes of movement and exercise and see how you'll feel. And the best result for me is when a child does it at school, goes home to his mum and says, Mum, can I do one of my workouts with Joe on the Body Coach TV? And that is happening on a small scale.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It's kind of like, how do we amplify that? And that is something that I think is so important because people care and people want, obviously, kids to be healthy, but who's really making a real impact? Who's making a proper movement and getting things going? So I think that is the thing that is, it's like a responsibility that I've got, and I really, really want to utilize my social media, my power in influencing people to exercise.
Yeah. Also, I really like that that's your sort of side hustle passion project, and yet it's the thing that you hope will be your legacy. I think that says a lot about you. Let's talk about the second desert island dish, and that's the first dish that you learned to cook.
So as I said, if I think about the food I ate through university or even like through you know, like college, it would be things like frozen pies and, you know, microwave curries and things. I mean, it's terrible that I used to live like that, but it was just because it's all I knew. But when I started getting into Lean and 15 and the Instagram, one of the first things I really remember posting was a Thai green curry. And the reason I loved it is because I realized that if you had coconut milk and a little tub of, you know, a cut tin of curry paste, whether it was green or red or yellow, you could make a really, really yummy curry. And it actually tasted quite authentic. And I'd use a bit of, it was the first time I used kind of spices as well, like basil and fresh chili and things. So I realized that with very few ingredients, you can make a really tasty dish that you'd normally have at like a takeaway or a curry house.
Yeah. So you came to cooking quite late in life, and it was just through experimenting.
I suppose I was cooking, yeah, like through university. I'd do like the odd thing, like a stir fry, probably the most I could do. But it was, my real passion came when I had the idea for Lean in 15, which was like, I was 25 when I started Instagram. So I think I was quite late. Because I was obsessed with sharing new recipes, I thought, right, I've done a tiger and curry now, what can I do next? And I'd do a pie, or I'd do a stir fry, or a kind of soup. And so every time I was challenging myself and pushing myself to learn something new, because I didn't want to share the same content.
Yeah, and probably sort of subconsciously, that's what people really liked, was that you were sort of learning at the same time and showing how easy it was because you were learning it too, in a way. I wondered, so you've already mentioned that your mum wasn't the biggest cook. You've now obviously had 7 best-selling cookbooks. What does she think of what you've become in terms of the food aspect?
They're all obviously super proud of me, and yeah. I've definitely seen a shift in them in terms of their health and fitness and the foods they eat and the decisions they make. So it's had a kind of knock-on effect, like a halo effect around my friends and family, that I've got these books and they use them and they cook recipes. And
if we were to go back and you were sort of 10 years old and someone was going to tell all your friends and family that this is what you would end up doing and what you would become, do you think anyone would believe that you would become sort of the second most influential person in food in the UK?
No, I think they would have thought he's going to end up like being a naughty kid in school. Because I was a bit of a kind of a class clown. I wasn't that focused academically, and I didn't even think I was creative. I just was very passionate and very into like sport and fitness and activity. So I always knew I'd do something in that kind of space. But no, it's hilarious. And my friends laugh now when they see me on like Good Morning Britain or This Morning Cooking a Recipe. They send me pictures and screenshots and memes and just take the mick out of me, because it's so far from the child I was and the lifestyle I grew up with and the kind of, the way I live my life. It was just, you'd never imagine it.
Yeah. Also quite cool to have friends like that who sort of never let you get too big for your boots. I'm sure you never would anyway. But let's go back to the beginning of all of this, which really was only a few years ago. I mean, I know in essence it was 8 years ago, but it feels like it has all happened relatively quickly. You, at the start, thought that you wanted to be a PE teacher, but you quickly realized that wasn't for you and you started out as a personal trainer. But it was quite tough going at the start, wasn't it? And whilst that's hard to imagine now, you didn't have clients sort of banging down your doors and you would go outside Richmond Tube Station and hand out flyers. Tell us a little bit about that time.
I like sharing this story because it's really kind of inspiring for people that, you know, when you go out and do it, whether it's freelance or you set up your own company or you're fending for yourself and you're not in a stable employment, it's a scary place to be. And it's quite, you know, when you get knocked back, you lose confidence and you want to quit and you want to give up. But I would cycle. I lived at my dad's in Surbiton, had a mountain bike and a little trailer because I couldn't afford a van. So I had a trailer and I'd load up my kettlebells and the boxing pads. And I would cycle from Surbiton to Richmond and get to the park for 6 a.m., I'd set up, I'd hang the TRX on the tree and the rope around the bottom of the tree and have all the stations lined out and thinking, you know, like 15, 20 people are going to come and it's going to be great. And then like nobody would turn up and it'd be raining and I'd be so disheartened, but I just refused to kind of give up. I thought the only way this is going to grow is if I come back next week and if I go flying and if I get more people in the community to know that it exists. So I would stand outside Richmond train station at rush hour. So from sort of 6:30 till 8 a.m., you know, handing out flyers and saying, come to my boot camp and just commute is like annoying them every day with my face and my flyer.
And but did it work?
It worked, yeah, because I did it for a year. I kept going back and I just think people need to be more have more self-belief and really, really commit to their decisions and not just panic and go back to, you know, their old job or their old kind of career. So for anyone listening, yeah, like if you're starting a company or you've got a dream or a passion, just keep working towards it because it will build. It might take a long time. I didn't earn any money for about a year.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've heard you say lots of times that whilst people do always say that you're an overnight success, you do always say that you sent 20,000 tweets on Twitter before making a penny and over 1,000 pictures on Instagram. So you did, you know, you were out there working hard before this all kicked off.
Yeah, so alongside the personal training when I was doing the boot camps and that kind of built up, that's when I started sharing stuff on Twitter and Instagram. And I was doing it all. I was building my community. I was doing Instagram and Facebook and I was doing the boot camps. But eventually it became too much and I switched and I kind of passed the boot camp on to a friend. But I put in the same effort and consistency with my social media as I did with my boot camp in real life. And I had no idea I was going to monetize it. I really, really didn't. When I was posting on Twitter in 2013 and Instagram in 2014, there wasn't really many like influencers. It wasn't like book deals and brand partnerships. You know, now it's like, it's obviously a career almost. People say, I don't want to go to university. I don't want to have a 9-to-5. I want to be an influencer. And so I may be one of the last or maybe one of the first kind of truly authentic entrepreneurs who came out of Instagram. But now it's like, they've seen that I got a book deal. They've seen that I've had all this success. And I think now it's like, it is a career choice.
That's so interesting, isn't it? So when you started, it was purely a passion project in a way, because yeah, it wasn't, you didn't know that it was going to turn into what it has become.
100%. Yeah, totally.
And Instagram was kind of the key changing factor, wasn't it? When they introduced videos.
Yeah. In 2014, I think they opened up the video and you could post 15-second videos. So I had the idea, and I definitely wasn't the first person to share recipes. There was other people I can think of. There was a guy called Fit Men Cook and all these other video meal channels. But I just thought, I'm going to do it my way, a little bit more personality, you know, hanging out the window, throwing stuff in the pan and being a bit silly. And like I said, I can't honestly say that I had this vision. I was marketing and I thought, this is content marketing. I'm building an audience. And one day when I've got this audience, I can sell them a product. Like, it just wasn't on my radar. It really wasn't. And people think that I had this massive scheme and vision and ambition, but my ambition was to have like a chain of boot camps and one day get a mortgage and one day hopefully have a house and be like the first in my family to buy a house. You know, we grew up on a council estate. Like, none of us ever had any kind of ambition or real drive. And yet, but as I've become more successful now, I'm really ambitious because I've realized it's like I can achieve things and I can set higher goals.
Yeah, that's amazing. And the Lean In 15 thing was that really caught on. And the name, was that something that you spent ages brainstorming or was it just sort of like a flash of inspiration and you just put it out there? And then
my first few videos were so monotone. I'm really quiet and really? Sort of, so I just didn't know what I was doing and I was a bit nervous and I thought, I'm going to put it out. But the idea, because I had 15 seconds, I thought, and it rhymed like Lean In 15.
Yeah.
But it was a 15 second video showing how to cook a 15 minute meal. So I just cut through the noise and the confusion of even a cookbook. Like, a cookbook is great, but it's still also, you've got to buy it, you've got to search through it, and it's a bit like, it's not as visual as video content. So I kind of had this really good format that was perfect timing and people's attention span. Like, it used to be 15 seconds, now it's probably 2 or 3 seconds. Mm. I think now, I truly believe this, that if I started today with the same idea and did Lean in 15 today, based on people's now current attention span, I wouldn't have had nowhere near the success.
Do you think that's true?
I can see, because even when I do an Instagram story, people are swiping, they can't even deal with 15 seconds. And so nowadays, if you're not catching their attention the first 2 or 3 seconds, they're like, next, swipe, move on. Oh, so
goodness, that's so alarming, isn't it?
More and more, our attention span is shorter and shorter. Yeah, I do believe that.
And so you found with the videos, the more personality that you put into them, the better they did, which I think is kind of amazing, isn't it? Because ultimately that means that the secret to your success is you.
I get asked this question, like, how did, you know, there's all these personal trainers, there's all these people on Instagram. How did you stand out, like, in the UK or whatever? How did you make a difference? And I think it does come down to, obviously I really worked hard and I was in the right time with the right idea, but it must be, it's your ability to connect. If you threw me into a party or a bar, or you threw me into, you know, a gym and said, go and make some friends, I'd make friends right away. And so I just apply that principle to social media. I just treat people well and I'm kind to people. I'm friendly. I'm not offensive. I'm trying to inspire. So I'm just being myself. I truly am being myself. When you're passionate, I think when you're ambitious and passionate and enthusiastic, people are drawn to that. It's like when you go to a nightclub and someone's dancing, having loads of fun. You want to be with that person. You want to dance with the person that's having the most fun. And it's the same as me. I was having fun, throwing stuff in the pan and just really being energetic and being a positive kind of energy that people are like, and I like this guy, he's making me laugh and he's getting me out of bed, he's getting me exercise and he's getting me cooking. So I just replicate that every single day. That's my mission. Can I get one person to exercise? Can I get one person to laugh and cook and go in the kitchen and try something new? And that truly is my mission. And it's, if I stay on that mission, then everything else will grow. My audience will continue to grow and I can retain my engagement.
Yeah. And we all need a bit more positivity. So I think that's really important. And I think the power of one, you hear that quite a lot, don't you? If you focus on the sort of whole audience, you almost are in danger of losing your message. But if you focus on the one individual and what you're trying to achieve for them.
You start blogging or you start a YouTube channel or a podcast, you have to just focus on one new listener and think, can I get one person to enjoy this today? And that's it. And
yeah,
that, if you think like that, you can have a really steady growth and you haven't got to kind of panic and chase scale. I think everyone chases scale. Like, I need 1 million followers, I need 10 million, but I'd rather have 100,000 really engaged people because they're the ones that are going to do my YouTube workouts. They're going to, you know, support my new book and be there for, you know, fans for life. So
yeah,
definitely. I'm really, really so grateful for my audience. And I still send video messages and voice notes and, you know, it's not someone else doing it. It's me because it's my voice. You know, when you get a message from me, it's me. And that's powerful. People really love that.
Yeah, people must really love that. Let's talk about the third Desert Island dish. And that's the best dish you've ever eaten.
Right. So I've had some really lovely food. I've traveled a lot since I've met Rosie. We've had some wonderful holidays. And I do love, like, my favorite thing is I love cooking at home, but I also love eating in nice restaurants. But the one that's the most special meal of my life is probably, and it's a bit of a romantic one, but me and Rosie got engaged in the Maldives. And we're in this nice kind of, you know, those little sandy island hotels, and they set up a private dinner for us on this little sand island. It was like literally in the middle of the sea. They took us out on a boat and they had like a little chef there with a little barbecue. It wasn't like a restaurant, it was just a guy with a barbecue. And he made us basically our dream meal that I kind of requested for us.
What was it?
So firstly, we started with some truffle arancini, which we love. It's just like, I don't know what it is. Me and Rosie are just obsessed with truffle arancini.
Yeah.
And then it was kind of a mixed grill. So they had like tiger prawns, a little bit of Wagyu steak. Did you say, is it Wagyu or Wagyu?
Wagyu.
Wagyu, whatever you say. A little bit of steak. And then it had some, like a little lamb chop. So like a mixed grill, a surf and turf. So like a little bit of each with some lovely like grilled vegetables and some rice and a kind of jacket potato. And, but we were sitting on this tiny table with like candles and like beautiful lights everywhere and under the stars. And then the dessert, and then, well, then I asked her to marry me. So in between the courses, then I wrote her a little letter that I said, oh, can you read this little letter? And she says to me she didn't know what was going on, but she must have known at this point. And then so in between the main and dessert, which is our favourite dessert, I asked her to marry me.
Oh, so that was after she'd read the letter?
We did start as a mains, then we read the letter.
Yeah.
And she read the letter, and then Then I got down on one knee and asked her to marry me. Oh. And then we had our favourite dessert, which is an Eton mess.
Oh my goodness, that sounds amazing. And did the restaurant and the hotel, did they know what you were planning?
Yeah, I said, because I emailed and said, look, I'm coming, because Rosie was pregnant at the time. I said, my girlfriend's pregnant, I really want to marry her. Have you got any ideas of what can I do that's special when I'm there? And they suggested this little like island thing. So they kind of helped me, but they said, what would you like to give her? And so this is like her dream menu, but also mine. So we kind of share the food taste. So yeah, that was a bit of a cheesy one, but that's probably the most memorable. And I think it's nice that we'll always remember that food. Like we won't remember the music necessarily, but you know, you always remember the food and the flavors and the place you were when you asked that.
Oh my God, that sounds amazing. Were you scared?
Well, no, because she was like, you know, she was carrying my baby and I thought, she's not going to say no. Good time to ask. I'd be pretty gutted if she did.
That's a top tip for everyone. So I wondered, was there a pivotal moment that you can remember thinking, hang on a second, everything is really starting to take off here, I'm onto something? Like, was there one moment? Because I know that you say going on Sunday brunch was quite a big turning point, but was there a specific moment that you can think of?
There's lots of little different milestones along the way, like the first time you get picked up by, like, you know, an Evening Standard article or The Telegraph would write about you, and that would kind of get a spike in social media and my online plans and stuff. But I suppose, yeah, a big moment was definitely Sunday brunch, because they did a VT with some of my Lean and 15 videos that were really like larry and outlandish and stuff. So people like sort of it caught their attention. So the day I was on Sunday brunch, I got 10,000 new followers, which is quite a lot.
Wow, that's loads.
So it lifted my kind of my brand and my visibility. But then I did things like, I did Soccer Aid last year, played in Soccer Aid with like some amazing footballers.
Yeah, it's a big moment.
I've also done a world record hit session in Hyde Park. I did a world record for the world's largest outdoor hit session.
Oh my God, how many people?
There was 4,500 people. So to go from running a boot camp where like two or three would turn up to within 4 years having 4,500 people in Hyde Park, and I was on the main stage, it was like just a proud, it was emotional. I was quite nervous, but also like really proud that I brought people together through exercise. And there was really fit people in the crowd, but then really unfit, and they were all working really hard to like stay in the workout to get the world record. So I was just super proud. That was a very proud moment for me.
That is amazing, isn't it? I mean, I can't even wrap my head around that. Tell us a little bit about the books, because it started with one book, and then that sold so well before it was even published that it turned into another book, and now we're 7 books later. How did that all happen?
I was cruising along, doing my videos with my iPhone, you know, in my flat in Surbiton, and I was running my boot camps and I was busy and just having a bit of fun. I got an email from HarperCollins, like, and I thought, it's a bit, how do they get my email and how they contact me? But they said, oh, can you come? And we love what you're doing. We've watched you online and we'd love to do a book deal with you. So like, I rang my mum, was like, Mum, HarperCollins want to have a meeting with me. So I went along on my own, didn't really know what I was doing. And they kind of offered me, they said to me there and then, like, we can see something in you. We'd like to offer you a book deal. Like, there's no financials or anything, but so I came away and I sort of thought, oh, this is great. And I spoke to a friend of mine. She was my business mentor at the time. And she said, you need to get a literary agent. So obviously the concept was there and the idea of like a Lean and 15 book. And they helped me kind of sculpt a book proposal. And he sent that to all the different publishers. So then it becomes an auction where they're blind bidding for the rights. And it went from a one book deal to a two book deal. So originally I got a two book deal with Pan Macmillan, which is a Bluebird, it is the imprint. And because it done so well on pre-orders, you know, like we're talking tens of thousands of copies, they signed me for an 8-book deal.
I mean, is that the first time that's ever happened? That feels
unheard
of.
Thinking that short amount of time. And in the first year I released 3 books in 1 year. I mean, that's very unheard of because the first one was just such a success. I mean, I think it sold 1.3 million copies now, the first book alone.
That's absolutely incredible. And I think really interesting because I can definitely imagine lots of people getting that first meeting, you know, a book deal sort of bandied around, and then you kind of just go with it because that feels so exciting. But I feel like that sort of shows how savvy you are, that you got an agent and then this whole bidding war happened. I think that's really impressive.
Yeah, because I would have just, if someone offered me $5,000, I'm like, woo, that's a lot of money to me. I'm like, would have bitten a hand off. But obviously, yeah, having an agent does help. But again, like, they had no idea. My publisher said that in order to make their money back and, like, you know, start earning some royalties, they needed to sell 70,000 books. they were like, but they budgeted for 70,000 book sales. So when they sold 700,000 in about 5 months, you can imagine why they asked me to do another book deal.
Yeah, that's incredible. We're on to possibly the most important question of the day. It's the fourth Desert Island dish. Joe Wicks, what is your favorite sandwich?
So there's two things that pop to mind. I do love a sandwich. I make loads of different types of sandwiches, and I'm even still like throwing in a couple of quavers and Watsits in. I love putting crisp in the sandwich.
It's so good.
If I'm grabbing a sandwich on the go, like, I'll always have to buy a pack of salt and vinegar crisps to throw them in there for the crunch.
Yeah, the crunch.
But if I'm making a sandwich at home, I would just keep it really simple. I like a chicken, pesto and sun-dried tomatoes. So a really good quality pesto and just like a jar of sun-dried tomatoes and maybe a little bit of spinach, but just classic on a nice kind of wholemeal or granary brown bread, and that's it, really quite simple. But the sandwich, and I know you've probably heard this before, that jumps out. I've just been to New York, so I had the Cat's Deli. Everyone's like, you've got to go to Cat's Deli. And for those listening, it's basically a really famous deli where loads of celebrities go over the years, and you can order these massive sandwiches like pastrami and salt beef and stuff. So I had the classic pastrami beef sandwich with white bread with the mustard, and oh my god, it's so good. You've got like pickles and like really thick bread and like the meat. I mean, it's literally like an inch worth of meat. They just layer it and layer it and layer it. But it's really good quality because it's like slow cooked. It's like brisket. They like cook it for hours. It's not like a cheap meat either. It's a really good quality meat. So
it is as good as everyone says.
It's worth going for lunch, yeah. And do it on the first day you get there because you're going to want to go back.
Yeah, that's really good advice. Don't do it on the way back to the airport. That would be a big error.
Yeah, I do love a sandwich, but like when I was a kid, I'd eat bananas, peanut butter and banana sandwiches. I used to put, like quavers in there, anything cheesy quavers or Watsits. Yeah, they go well in a sandwich.
And any crisp in a sandwich is it?
We couldn't afford cheddar cheese, so we'd just get Watsits instead. We were lucky if we had cheese and ham.
So obviously there are so many strings to your bow now. You started as a personal trainer, but is that still sort of the number one thing that you describe yourself as? When you go to a dinner party, how do you describe what you do? Or maybe everyone already knows, and it's a bit like that scene in Notting Hill where he doesn't know that she's an actress, but everyone else does.
I never know what to say. Like when I go to America, if the customs people are, what do you do? And I look at Rose and I'll say like author, and she'll laugh. She's like, because she doesn't see me as an author. I don't see myself as an author.
But yeah, you're definitely an author.
And I can't say, online entrepreneur. Like that's also really, really silly. So I normally just say like, I'm a fitness trainer and a chef. But then again, I'm not even a chef. So I am confused. I don't know who I am right now. But
I love that you give this much thought to the customs man.
Because they grill me. He says to me, what? Because they like, well, I say I'm going to be here for 3 months. Where's your visa? I'm like, well, I'm just going to be relaxing my family. Well, how are you not working? Because online business and I've got the books and the company in the UK. I don't need to work in America, but they think that I'm going to be like jumping a visa and working in a bar or something. So
like, no, look at my Instagram. I'm fine.
Yeah, they're like, and I say, I've got a book. And they go, well, how many books do you sell? I'm like, well, I've sold 3 million books, and they just sort of think, oh, okay, I'll let you through.
Yeah, that's quite a good conversation.
Yeah. I always get grilled because I'm quite young, and they think, how can a guy that's this young not be working, and how can you support yourself?
Yeah.
And they're like, are you a trust fund baby? I'm like, I'm not a trust fund baby. My parents are skint.
They ask very personal questions. So I found a quote where you said, this is what you wanted to do. You said, I want to do what Uber has done for travel, what Airbnb has done for hotels, what Spotify has done it for music, Amazon and Netflix have done it for movies, and I want to do the same thing for fitness. I want to create somewhere that everybody comes to. It's a destination. I mean, that's a huge ambition, and coming from anyone else, it might almost seem too big, but I feel like if anyone can do it, you can do it. Have you always been really ambitious?
That is my vision, and it's still, even to this day, I still want to reach as many people as I can, and I use all the digital platforms. It's very hard though, in terms of, I think everyone's trying to crack that Netflix model of subscription where tens of millions of people signing up, but with fitness, it's subjective. You might not like my training methods. You might not like my personality and videos. So you're never going to speak to everybody. I'm lucky that I've got guys and girls training with me. But I think in order to really build the Netflix of fitness, you need to have multiple trainers with different disciplines. So you'd have yoga, you'd have, meditation and, boot camp and kettlebells, because you can't rely on one face to be the face of fitness. I think I've realized now that, I'll only attract a certain type of person that like my kind of workouts and my personality.
But that's a good point, because you're right. You have managed to appeal to both men and women in the same way, which is really clever.
it's quite rare, because normally you'll have like a demographic. You might have like, you know, girls getting ready for their bikini holidays, or guys that want to go to the gym and get muscly. So, but I do talk to kind of a wide audience, and that's how my channels are quite big. But I wasn't, like I said, as a child, I wasn't ambitious. I just thought, I want to be a PE teacher because I really like my PE teacher, and I thought it was a cool job and I thought I'd enjoy it. And then when I became a personal trainer, I thought, if I can just scale this boot camp and have like 6 or 7 locations and have trainers working for me, that'd be a great, you know, income, and I won't have to do as many hours. But like I said, that was it. I wasn't really pushed by my parents. Me and my brother Nicky were the first ever in my family to go to university. And so, yeah, we kind of set a standard. We thought, you know, we want to be more, we want to do a bit more. And now my brother Nicky works with me, which I love. We get to what he's like an editor and a journalist from that background. But now he helps with my digital content and my strategy around that. So,
so fun.
It's just lovely that I've got to work with my brother, and we are together. I'm so ambitious. Like, we're super, super driven now. And yeah, he really helps me with certain things.
Yeah. I guess it sounds like you've always been ambitious, like wanting more boot camps and sort of building it that way. But the goalposts have changed slightly. So you're sort of, you know, you're just working towards slightly bigger things now.
As you become successful, you achieve small little things, and then you start to really believe in yourself and set bigger goals. I think we're all, a lot of humans, and all of us, including me, we're held back by our limiting beliefs that we believe that, oh, we can't do that. We can't change direction. I should have done it when I was 20. It's too late. You know, if you live like that and stay in your lane, you're never going to really excel and challenge yourself and actually do things that you can do. And we can all achieve so much more than we think.
Yes. Feel very motivated by this. Okay, let's talk about the fifth desert island dish. And that's the dish you eat the most often.
So the dish I like, I'm all about speed. So simplicity, quick, you know, and like minimal ingredients. So one of the things I always tend to lean towards is like Mexican food. So whether it's tacos, tortillas, burritos, because it's kind of a healthy option. If you think about it, you've got, you know, a protein source, you've got some rice, you've got some carbohydrates from the tortilla and the wraps and things, but you've also got loads of veg. You've got, you know, green beans and roasted red peppers and chilies and jalapenos, and you can obviously put kidney beans and stuff in there. So it's a full of flavor, super easy to make. And sometimes I'll make chicken tortillas. The next day it might be fish tacos. But I actually went to Mexico on a holiday, and we were in a really lovely hotel in Cabo, and they had like a Mexican tortilla and taco like tasting thing, and where you get to make them. And so I kind of use a little bit of that, and when I get home with Rosie, we just, it's one of those things, you know, you can put it all on the table and like build your own. It's kind of fun as well, isn't it? So for me, I'd say the thing I eat most often at home would be Mexican food.
Yeah,
but things have changed a lot, because like I said before, I was obviously cooking for my Lean in 15 books. I was running around thinking what we're going to cook next, but now this Gusto thing, I'm getting four recipes a week, so my variety of foods has changed so much.
Yeah, so I want to ask you about the Gusto. So that didn't come about in the way that lots of people might think it did. It sort of, you actually approached them, which I think is sort of counter to what people might have imagined.
Most brand deals come about by a brand will come to you and say, right, we want to do something. Can you hold this and say this is cool and use this and blah, blah, blah. But I basically had a really big opportunity with a supermarket in the UK, and I was really excited about it. But when I saw the product, what it was they presented to me, it was basically like ready meals and microwave dinners. And it wasn't the kind of the thing I wanted to do. I really believe that people should cook. And my whole brand and my whole philosophy for the past 5 years has been, guys, you have got 15 minutes. You can cook. You can enjoy recipes at home. And so we approached Gusto with an idea to put some veggie Lean in 15 recipes within the app, within the packages, so that we could promote the veggie. That was as simple as that. I listened to a podcast by Timo, who's the CEO of the company, called Monocle Podcast, and it was brilliant. I just loved his philosophy and his mission. He really, really wants to get families cooking at home. So my brother Nicky connected with him on LinkedIn, sent him a DM and said, can we come in and have a chat with you? It evolved really quickly into this thing, like, let's have some body coach recipes in there. Let's have a, you know, some regular recipes, and let's have a kind of partnership. But I didn't want to just be a brand ambassador. I wanted to be an investor. So I invested some money within the company.
Amazing.
Because I really believe in it. But before this, I was a customer. So my mum, my dad, all my friends, my brother, we're all using it because I can't explain. It's like when you download the Uber app, you never go back and say, I'm not going to use it anymore.
Yeah.
It's like it's solved a problem because it's convenience as well. So you get the delivery to your door, and it's removed that stress of what am I going to cook? Where have I got to go and get the food from? And how have I got to like find time? So,
but it's also such a clever balance, isn't it? Because you are as you say, you are still cooking that dish. It's just there's no waste, and the decision of what you're going to make has kind of been taken away in that moment. But it's sort of, it's a really clever balance.
If I had done a deal with the supermarket and I had to come out and say, hey guys, go and get my ready meals, I would have died. A little bit of me would have died inside.
Yeah.
When I announced the Gusto partnership, like, I'm so proud of it and I believe in it, and it's been such a great response. You know, thousands of people have signed up since I've had the partnership, and it's the same emotional response that I had. What did I do before this? Like, what did I used to eat? How did I go food shopping? And so because I've got my mum and the closest people to me using it, and we all talk about, we've got a little WhatsApp thread called the Gusto Gang, where we like compare what we've got and give each other tips. Oh my God, stuff.
I love that.
And so because I hand on heart believe in this and I've invested in the company, it's so easy for me to talk about it, and so naturally. And so, you know, I'm more proud of the things I've turned down. You know, I've had so many people offer brand stuff, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to turn that big opportunity down because I believe in this. And even though it's a smaller thing, it's growing. I believe the future of retail for food is going to be things like Gusto, where you get the food delivered to your door. And it's just and like I said, yeah, you get the recipe and the ingredients. You're still learning to cook.
Yeah.
And it's one of the things I love the most about it, as you can see, as I'm a super fan, is it's made me cook with Rosie. It's a social thing.
Yeah, that's
we sit there, we've got the card, we do half the steps each, we talk through the recipe, we sit down, we're enjoying food together. Whereas before, it would be like a lean in 15, it's a bit stressed, or I'd eat on my own, and now we're coming together. And so, honestly, if you haven't tried it, give it a go. It's wonderful.
And that is one of the amazing things that, you know, about food is the social aspect. So if it can bring that back into family life, I think that is so clever, isn't it? I was going to say that obviously it's sort of such a privileged position to be in, where you are being approached by different brands and companies wanting you to represent them. But I think there is quite a lot to admire and respect in turning down things that don't fit your brand, especially when you've built something really authentic. I guess people would just instantly be able to see if you were doing something that you didn't really believe in. So,
yeah, and I really believe in a long-term, you know, vision of, that you can take the money in the short term, you can take all this brand deal and hold this product and take 50 grand here and 100 grand there, but you know, your fans switch off so quick and they see it's not authentic. And so I've had to turn a lot of things down, and it is difficult when someone offers you like 100 grand to do a few posts. Yeah. It's really, it makes you think, but I want to be around in 10, 15, 20 years, and I know that refusing those things in the short term, it means my brand equity and my engagement and my trust and my loyalty of my audience is going to be there in 10, 15 years. Whereas if you're just taking everything hand over fist, you won't sustain it.
Yeah.
You just won't. You just, because people just switch off. They don't want to see it all the time.
Yeah, that's a good lesson. Okay, we're onto the sixth Desert Island dish, and that's your go-to dinner party dish.
I've got two things that I think of when I think about guests coming over.
Yeah.
My first thing was always a chicken pie from my first book. It's like a chicken and leek pie, quite creamy. Then you put a phyllo pastry on top, and it's a really lovely, because it's like 15 minutes, whack it in the oven for like about 10, 15. So you're like door start to finish half an hour, and you can serve it with some mashed potato and some veg. But I've actually gone up in the world because I'm now doing risotto.
Oh, right.
Yeah. I'm doing risotto because I tried it through Gusto, actually. They did a really lovely, it was like pecan, sage and blue cheese risotto. And I've also got one in my book, my veggie book, like a roasted butternut squash. And basically I've realized it's one of those things that you make with love, and it takes patience. But when you get it right, you get the texture and the creaminess, and you put a bit of Parmesan or something on at the end. Like, risotto has got to be one of the most satisfying like tastes and textures, would you say?
Yeah, so good.
Like, because you can do it really well veggie.
Yeah,
like
also,
really...
I'm kind of imagining like you've got people over and you're just like in the kitchen with a glass of wine making a risotto. Like, you're sort of quite a sociable thing.
Yeah, I like that moment where you're cooking and talking. It's like the build up to the meal where you sit down. Like, I don't just get them around and say, right, dinner's at 7 and it's on the table. I like getting around at sort of 6:30. And I've just got a nice dining table. It can fit like 8 people. So I did my first dinner party a few weeks ago, and I actually went back to another Gusto recipe. It was roasted red pepper and sage risotto. So like, you roast the red peppers in the oven for sort of 15 minutes. You start doing your risotto, and then at the end, you put the peppers on top, and you put some fresh sage on and a little bit of Parmesan cheese. And they were all blown away. They thought it was like restaurant standard. And also, if you get anything left over, you can have it for the next day.
Well, yeah. Also, I like how, I mean, to keep coming back to Gusto, but I like how it's sort of influencing you even when you're not making the dish that they've given you that day. Like, it's sort of, the recipes are obviously so interesting that you're inspired outside of that.
I'm eating more variety now than I ever have, because I used to rely on my books, and I would I mean, this is your laugh, but I used to walk around, and if I had nothing to cook, and I'd go to the shelf in wherever I was, like Sainsbury's or Waitrose or whatever, and pick my book up and quickly grab the ingredients for a recipe and go and make it. Because you do, you just get that moment where you're like, what do I cook? And you might have all the cookbooks under the sun, and you sort of, as you always lean back to the same things, you kind of repeat your basket, you repeat the recipes. And so I love it when the app opens up with the new recipes, you just try new things, and it's a game changer. Like I said, I'm talking to you like this because I'm passionate, but I'm telling my friends and family every day, get on it. And so I'm a proper convert of the Gusto gang, really.
On Desert Island Dishes, we've got a cookbook corner. So I wondered, what is your all-time favorite cookbook?
This is a good question. I get sent a lot of cookbooks, and you know, I heard this stat from my publisher. The average person, when you get a recipe book, 100 recipe cookbook, the average person cooks 6 recipes from the books.
Is that really true?
Yeah. On average, they said, like, it's a stat. But one book that's come out recently, which I really love, and I talked about it a little bit, is Jamie Oliver's 5 Ingredients. Two reasons. I love the TV show. Was amazing. And he's so good at describing food. But the way it's laid out with the images, you've got the 5 images, the ingredients, and the recipe. It's just such a great format, and it's just such a simple idea that has been so successful. And I've made quite a few recipes from that book, because it's almost like Lean and 15 in the sense that it's just super quick, 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Just a really simple promise.
It's a good option.
But so that's my favorite recipe book from which now a chef. But if you ask me what the most special book to me, in all honesty, it's got to be my first Lean and 15 book. It's called The Shift Plan, so the red one. And because it's red, I call it the little red steam engine, because it just chugs along, constantly selling, never goes away. And the reason it's so special to me is because it's changed the eating habits of a lot of people. Like, millions of people have got that book and got in the kitchen and tried it out for the first time. And, you know, it changed my life and people's lives and my mum and dad. It's complete. Without that book, you know, I wouldn't be sitting where I am now in this house. I wouldn't have connected with all the people. I wouldn't have had a TV show and a DVD. And so I have a lot to thank to my publisher, Carol, for like believing in me and taking a punt on basically an unknown Instagrammer who had a few thousand followers. And so I will always remember that book as being a special one that hopefully will be sort of remembered for years to come.
I thought you might pick that one in terms of most treasured, because as you say, that one book did really change your life.
I'm not saying it's like the best cookbook of all time in terms of recipes, because I would much rather go to Gordon, Jamie and the top boys for that. But
the one that means the most.
Yeah, it means the most. And for simple, like a beginner just getting into to food and fitness, it's just a great little entry point.
Yeah. Okay, I can't believe it, but we're on to the 7th final desert island dish, and that's the last dish you would choose to eat before being cast off to the desert island.
This is a great question, because I'm a massive fan of desert island discs as well, so I love this format, and I just love knowing that you've got, I was thinking, yes, I always like this question, because everyone asks this at like book signings, what would be your death row meal? What would be your last meal before you?
So you've got a perfect answer planned.
So are you ready for it?
Yes.
Number one. Crispy calamari with aioli. Crispy calamari with aioli, which I love, because it's just such a nice kind of way to start your meal and just kick things off with a gin and tonic. Secondly, you might think this is boring, but wherever I go in the world, I don't care if there's 5-star restaurants, Michelin star, I always order the burger.
Okay.
Because I'm just a massive burger fan.
Not boring at all.
So it'd be a beef burger with truffle parmesan fries.
Yes.
So just a classic like burger and chips, but it's got to be a really juicy burger. And then as a side, I'd have mac and cheese.
Yes.
Because you can't, I think if you've got a burger and fries, you want to dip your fries in the mac and cheese and put a bit of the mac and cheese in the burger.
Yeah.
With me.
Yeah, Joe, I'm sold. You don't have to convince.
So this is like a bit of a mix, but, and a dessert, my favorite dessert of all time is a chocolate fondant with like the hot, warm chocolate molten sauce inside and a scoop of ice cream, but not vanilla because I find that boring. It has to be chocolate. So double choc.
Oh, right. Okay. So, yeah.
Yeah. Choc on choc. If I had that meal now, like that would be my dream. I could die a happy man.
I mean, I think lots of people might be joining you on that one.
You're getting all the flavors. You're getting different textures. You're getting a bit of calamari. You're getting the truffle and the parmesan and then the mac and cheese with the ice cream just to cap it off. I mean, that is a win.
And that right there is definitely not Lean and 15. But Joe Wicks, those were your desert island dishes. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I've enjoyed it.
So many delicious goodies in that one. I am very into the idea of ordering a mac and cheese to dip your chips into. I learned loads about Joe during that and things I really didn't know before, which was always really lovely. If you're listening and you haven't yet left a 5-star review, please do, as it really does give the show a little boost and you will genuinely make my day. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget you can visit the website desertislanddishes.co for all the recipes, lots of kitchen tips and tricks, and you can also find me on Instagram at Margie Nomura. Thank you so much for listening. Bye.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.